021-446-0567 and on the WhatsApp line 072-567-1567 if you have any questions and if you'd love to join the conversation with us. Balancing the winds of reducing coal-fired energy with a tragic impact on South Africa's coal belt communities is what is of concern to us at the moment. Well, at the end of October, window 5 of the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers Procurement Program, successful bidders were announced and introducing 25 new renewable energy projects that will feed into South Africa's grid. Well, the country's efforts were further boosted by the announcement of a 130 billion rand deal with the UK, the US, France, Germany and the EU that will significantly help South Africa to move away from coal-fired energy together with the recently proposed legislation. So what we've done is that, you know, people live in a particular community, and with this community goes jobs. And I was explaining to Rafilwe this morning, if you have been working, your father's been working, generations in your family's been working on the coal mines, and all of a sudden the bulk of South Africa's coal mines, which are situated in Mpumalanga, also known as the South Africa's Coal Belt, you know, and now all of a sudden people are talking about independent power and alternative power. What happens to those communities? Janine Espen, the MD of Economic Development Solutions, is with us on the line this morning. Janine, a very good morning and welcome to Cape Talk.
Good morning and good morning to your listeners.
Janine, explain to us very quickly exactly where South Africa's coal belt is. I know that we have some reserves in our coal of almost 200 years of coal that we can use. Also, we have about 54 billion tons of coal in reserve that we can use. But there is the push now to renewable energies. Where are South Africa's coal mines and what are the communities living around them?
Well, the coal belt itself is quite a large area within Mpumalanga, and it stretches up into vast areas of Limpopo province as well. So you have areas surrounding Belfast, within Mpumalanga, etc., going right up to areas such as Lephalale, there's Burgersport, etc., where there are lots of our coal mines and coal power stations are situated.
Mm. How big are these communities? How many people are we talking about? And on the other hand, what kind of infrastructure at the moment exists for these communities? I was looking at Imalahleni, and I mean, people are living virtually on the doorstep of this coal mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some of the towns are fairly small. In some areas, you'll have areas such as around Wuchis, etc., in Mpumalanga, where the towns itself are not huge towns, but the surrounding communities and the residential areas where obviously the employees have, moved so that they are closer to their place of work, those areas have definitely expanded over the years. So there's, and then you have larger areas, within such as Burgersport, which has also grown and it's a town. It's a huge, well, not a huge city, but it is a town with a couple of thousand people living in those areas.
Chatting this morning to Janine Espen, the MD of Economic Development Solutions, and we're talking about the fact that when we reduce coal-fired energy and our reliance on coal-fired energy, what will be the impact on South Africa's coal belt communities? Those communities living in Belfast, in Mpumalanga, Lephalale, and Imalahleni. Now, Janine, impoverished communities affected by the shift away from coal, such as those in South Africa's coal belt, they must be probably thinking to themselves, what will happen to us? Where are we going to go? And we're looking at, the coal in South Africa feeds 12 of our major power stations. That is the magnitude of it all. And we're looking at close to 100,000 people, isn't it?
Yes. And I think, besides the coal that feeds our power stations, there's also coal that is supplied outside of the borders of South Africa to our neighboring countries. So, those communities, They've been built around those mines, as you mentioned when you opened earlier. You know, you have generations of people that have worked at those coal mines, and what we are going to, or what we anticipate seeing, is obviously people moving away from those areas, moving to the urban areas where we already have collapsing infrastructure in those urban areas. You'll also find that I think part of the challenge is that the communication around the mine closures is not very clear at the moment. So there's lots of communities where they are living in absolute ignorance around whether those mines are going to be closing or not, and the impact of what those mine closures will mean. So as part of a mine SLP, or I should say actually part of your mining right, the mines have to have a mine closure program. And those mine closure programs include the upskilling of the employees, retraining of employees, and also obviously the rehabilitation of the mines, which also has you know, some job opportunities. But if you've been a coal miner all your life, you know, then the opportunity for reskilling, upskilling, finding different work opportunities will be very minimal. If you're a truck driver, or you know, a driver of the yellow equipment, etc., or a safety officer, yes, there are obviously different work opportunities for you, and you can perhaps find work opportunities at other larger construction sites, etc. But for the coal miners themselves, and again, going back to people who have been working there all their lives, generational, that will be a very different strategy that would have to be employed.
I was actually just going to ask you, I mean, the impact of such an unsustainable migration of labours towards the metros to seek new opportunities, all of a sudden you have close to 100,000 people, and when we're talking people, are we perhaps just talking the mine workers and not their families, because obviously it could be a lot more if we're talking families and children. So this would be a very unsustainable thing if we have people looking for work in the metros once these mines close.
Yeah, and to add to that, you'd have the challenge of, you know, these are the breadwinners that's going to be moving away and looking for other work opportunities. And if they do leave their families behind in the towns, you know, there's the social impact of that. The social impact of the breadwinner, which is predominantly the man, or the, you know, the males moving away. So again, you're perpetuating the scenario of fatherless society, because the father's not around, because he's moved to the city to find work. So, you know, that's a broader social impact that one has to consider. But having said that, this is something that we can't get away from. You know, we do need to look at different forms of energy supply. And I guess the strategy should be not only, yes, we are moving away from coal, we are going to be in dire straits in those communities. What we do need to be looking at is what other industries can be established in those communities to keep those communities together and functional, and to keep the society together and functional.
Chatting this morning to Janine Espen. If you have any comments and you'd like to chat and join this conversation, don't forget to give us a call on 021-446-0567 or on the WhatsApp line on 072-567-1567. Janine, what can be done to mitigate job losses in the coal industry as coal-fired power winds down, you know, to look at training and skills development?
Yes. Obviously, the upscaling and training and development of the workers is crucial. You know, mines have also, some of the mines have already started looking at becoming independent power producers, in the sense that establishing renewable energy projects at the mining operations. But in doing so, those projects, when they are being constructed, they usually have job creation opportunities. But during the operations phase, there isn't many job opportunities that's available to the community.
So IPPs, the actual reason about IPPs and the thing behind IPPs is that they're not very labor intensive, so they will not be able to absorb practically 90% or 80% of the workforce on the coal mines at the moment.
Exactly. But if you look at, and you're looking at the general, you know, PV solar plants that get established or wind plants, they, once they reach operations, they don't require a large workforce. But if you are looking at other sources of energy supply, like biomass or waste to energy, you do require more labor-intensive work during operations. And I think in South Africa, there's definitely the opportunity for the expansion of such energy generation projects, and particularly within areas such as Mpumalanga, where you have a lot of forest, for example, you would be able to establish more biomass plants. Mm. We have lots of challenges in our rural areas where our waste landfill sites are full or non-existent. So waste-to-energy plants, the establishment of waste-to-energy plants becomes, you know, it's common sense, I guess, to establish those types of plants,
Janine,
in this area.
Very quickly, Matthew's on the line to us. Matthew, good morning and welcome to Cape Talk.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Zane. So this conversation highlights my big problem with politicians. You've got a community that is earning money from coal, and you've got a community which might earn money from something else. If you take away their coal income, I can guarantee you scientifically they will have financial problems. If you bring in a new green economy, I can say that possibly it might help them. So how is this for a sensible way forward? Instead of politicians always standing up every year and trying to get a vote based on all of the BS stuff they say they're going to do, which never happens, let politicians act like businessmen. So I, for example, if I want to attract investors, I have to come up with a business plan. The investors will look at my plan, look at the potential profit, look at the risks, and make a decision whether or not to invest with me based on that plan. Why are politicians any different? The politicians should come up with business plans. Mm. Then the local community looks at the plans. They vote for the politician based on which one has a workable plan. Now, the reality is that would kill voting in this country, because I've yet to see a politician come up with an intelligent or workable business plan. But I think my underlying concept is still a good one. So instead of politicians standing up, talking a whole bunch of hot air, a whole bunch of fantasy stuff, they have to come up with working business plans. Then the community, which is currently running off coal, can carry on with their coal. Yes, it's causing pollution. Yes, it might be contributing to the theory of global warming. But the reality is that it'll feed them next year. And until a businessman comes up with a working plan, that community shouldn't have to vote for it.
Matthew, thanks so much for your contribution. And politicians should have business plans. And I think the big step these days is the accountability as well as the assessment of politicians going forward within the next 5 years. But this brings me to a very, very big question, Janine. And we're chatting to Janine Espen, the MD of Economic Development Solutions. Is 130 billion rand has been sort of promised in terms of COP26 and for renewable energy and bringing that about. Would a part of that 130 billion rand not be used to retrain these workers and to retrain these communities and you know, to assist these communities in a transition phase?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the terms of the loan, but what I do know is that the, you know, Andre de Reuters has been on record to state that some of that money is hoped to be used to establish renewable energy projects at the sites where the power stations are reaching life of mine or life of energy supply.
Yeah.
So the idea is to change from coal to renewable energy, and that loan is specific around the construction of those renewable energy plants.
Let's hope that the construction of the renewable energy plants bring about at least employment for those communities living along the coal belt. It's time for just on 2 minutes to 10.